What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Tie Podcast. This is our first episode of 2024. So with that, happy New Year's to everybody. This one is releasing on midnight of January 1st, 2024. This is going to be a look back at some of the best of Mudball Monday for the year of 2023, a Mudball Monday medley, if you will, highlighting some of our favorite bits, some of the more important things here and there that we talked about on Mudball Monday, but also our typical banter and all of the things that we love to get into on Mudball Monday. So I hope everybody enjoys looking back on some of the best of 2023, and I hope you guys also are just as excited for 2024's Mudball Mondays as we are. Cheers. Starting us off, we're looking back on one of our favorite Mudball Mondays, a little chat about the guys to not be on the golf course. Don't be that guy.
This is truly the worst one. And I use that a lot, like the worst thing you do, the best thing you can do. No, this is my number one pet peeve. Worst thing you can do on a golf course. Don't be that guy who is the tee box talker. And it doesn't matter if it's my turn to play, if it's your turn to play, if it's someone else's turn in the group to play. I think that sometimes like there's this lionization of got to play in 245, got to play in 3 hours. And like, if it's a really short, quick golf course, like, yeah, 3 hours can be a pretty nice pace of play. If it's a fairly normal golf course, I personally am of the opinion that like 345, 4 hours is not bad pace of play. If you're actually like putting everything out, you're taking it seriously. You're actually there to, you know, have a nice round and, you know, have some conversation. Like, I don't think there's need to play in about 3 hours. What I do always feel the need for is like to keep it snappy. Like, let's keep on going. When it's time to play, it's time to play. Don't waste a bunch of time. And there is no greater place on a golf course to waste time than when it's someone's turn to hit and someone's just yapping away. And usually what it ends up being is it's not a question, because say I'm pegging the ball and someone asks me a question. My immediate answer is going to be, let me hit this shot. Let's tee off here and then I'll reply to you. It's the monologue guy. It's the guy that's telling a story and is like halfway through and you know the punchline's coming. And well, another don't be that guy. You don't want to be that guy that's like, hey, I got to hit my shot. So shut up and stop talking. Like, arguably worse, but you don't want to put someone in that situation. Don't get up to the tee box when it's time to play and go on some freaking monologue. That's what walking is for. That is why we're out there. We're getting ready to walk, you know, hopefully about 250, 300 yards, however many yards it is to our balls that are, again, hopefully in the fairway. That's when you talk. You do not talk on a tee box when the fairway is open. If you're waiting, which, you know, probably because someone else did that in the group before you, but if the pace of play is proper and you don't have to wait on the tee box, don't wait on the tee box. Hit your shots, start walking, and have the conversation then. It's my biggest pet peeve in golf, the tee box talker. Please, I'm begging you. I am absolutely begging everybody. Do not be that guy, nor that girl. We've said guy every time today. Don't be that guy or girl.
As much as I hate to say it, it may have just been the year of Michael Block. We certainly gave him way more coverage on the Tie Podcast than I wish we did. So, Block talk.
Yeah. So Michael Block. I think today is going to be mostly Block talk, and we'll block talk. We'll block it out for that. So there are three things that I really want to cover here. There's the opportunity that faced Michael Block, and then what he did to capitalize on that opportunity. That's the first thing. I think we can all agree that up until, you know, holing out on 18 at the PGA Championship, everybody, Michael Block, the fans, and the media were all on the same page. What an unbelievable story this is. And then ever since the call for Charles Schwab, things have gotten a little bit dicey, admittedly so. And that's kind of what I want to get into here, is just like the shitstorm that has been created in response to the opportunities that Michael Block has been given. Let's start with this, right? What an interesting case study of how you handle what seems like overnight fame, right? Like Henry Schimpf, you wake up on a Tuesday, you have the opportunity that you have earned to compete in a championship against great players. You know you're a great player. You know you maybe can handle it. I'm sure there are, you know, half a dozen PGA pros that were competing that week who saw this and the set of possibilities. Hey, you know, I'm not the best in this field, but I have game. I can go out there and compete and show them what I'm worth. Maybe this is my week. You know, you go out, you make a couple putts, surprise yourself under pressure. Hey, you know, we're part of the storyline. But Block took it a little bit further than that. Obviously, like the hole out. What an unbelievable moment, a moment that will be on replay forever. Well deserved. The up and down on 18. Was it one of the greatest up and downs of all time? You know, to be determined. I'll let you step in there.
Yeah, I will say that, as you said, like you, people are really in on the story, and then the whole Charles Schwab thing comes out. He gets the exemption, and then there are more. I mean, I think he's into the Heritage, the Canadian Open as well. Like people just like keep on going. I mean, God knows, maybe the Jackets have something up their sleeve. But I do want to say, as you talk about the up and down there, like that was the smoke to me. When there's smoke, there's fire, and I think that the Charles Schwab was like, okay, there is a full on bonfire going on here, but Nance went too far. Like when he called the one of the great up and downs of all time on 18, I was like, what's going on here? There is something in the water. Like we're going too far with this whole storyline. And then all of a sudden, when the Charles Schwab comes out, that was the fire. So I want to highlight that moment in the whole narrative here, that there was some serious smoke going in the air when we started talking about making that up and down with full clarity on the matter. Like sick up and down, without a doubt. Like short-sighted, got to hit two great shots to get back into the PGA next year. Like, do not get me wrong. That was sick. But was it one of the great up and downs of all time? Bullshit. No, that's just a bunch of hogwash.
One of the more peculiar events on the PGA Tour, the Zurich Classic, always fun to get into some different teams and how these things come to be. Also, some ones that we wish would come to be.
Higgs is one of those guys that, I mean, Stadler, I just don't know as much about, but Higgs is somebody who's just been somebody I've become more and more interested in. I think we're going to see him around for a long time. What do you like about his game?
Just nothing. Absolutely nothing. He has disgusting slap cuts. He doesn't hit it very far. I can't look at him when he's got one button going on the four button shirts. I mean, it's like, it's like my guy out there with the Brothers 54, like talking about it being a great bachelor party. And, you know, he's a small ball on top of a big ball sort of guy, looks like a snowman out there. And there's nothing I like about his game, but I do like him. He's got a great voice.
He does.
He's got a podcaster's voice, and I'm a Harry Higgs fan, but no, when it comes to his golf game, like get that out of here. This has nothing to do with golf.
I had this moment I guess it was the 2022 Masters, but Harry Higgs and, what's his name? Harold Varner. They were coming up 17 at Augusta, and I think DJ was with them. They were playing a practice round. They were all just shooting the shit, and I had never been in close proximity to Harry Higgs, but dude, some of the stuff they were talking about on that green and walking to 18T was just like, they were not focused on golf whatsoever. I mean, it was anything else but golf. And HV3 is just a hoot, so...
Yeah, shout out HV3, you know, part of the Range Goats licking his wounds as we speak. You know, it's a tough time, but
you hate to see
that. We're here for you.
The US Open, maybe not the best major of the year, but it's a damn good one. We had to talk about it on Mudball Monday.
And Sam Burns has made it very clear that he is one of the best putters of this generation. And if that continues this week, we're going to see a good performance out of him, I think. But Sam Burns, like coming off being player of the year, his final year in college, famously missed out for that final spot of the 17 Walker Cup to Zalatoris. And that is why I'm calling an MC Hammer for Zalatoris this week. It's just karma. So
Mr. Simus.
Yeah.
You're not doing this to me again, are you? You recall the British Open last year. You talked about Ricky. He wasn't in the field.
You're telling me Zalatoris isn't in the U.S. Open field?
Have you been living under a rock, Patrick Starr?
How is Zalatoris not in the U.S. Open field?
His
back is in like nine different directions. God bless America.
Well, he's
we call ourselves a golf adjacent podcast. There is golf involved in there. Hell, this isn't pickleball.
There's going to be no miscut from Zalatoris this week. Regardless, Sam Burns, strong showing this week. And I'll toss it back to you on that, Henry Schimp.
Maybe I should start talking about pickleball. Sheesh. All right.
This was my first foray into the U.S. mid-amateur this year. It's a little bit different scene than a U.S. amateur or college events or anything like that. So some interesting stories here that I had from my first experience at the mid-amateur level.
Well, straight off the dome, and I cite the number purely to show quantity rather than as any sort of brag, but I've played the U.S. amateur 6 times, and I can't say I've seen a single dart at any U.S. amateur. I think I've seen about 50 guys ripping a dart this week at the mid-am. Caddies at the mid-am, it's darts and coffee for breakfast. Like 7 a.m., people are lighting. That. I mean, they are lighting up the range, not with lights, but with lighters.
It looks like fireflies out there.
Exactly. The coffee is flowing. I mean, the breakfast, the food game this week has been rock solid, and like, there are a lot more people gaming French toast with a shit ton of syrup than you're going to see at like U.S. amateur. So just like the general treatment of things from an athletic endeavor standpoint is rather different. You're seeing a lot of people that are out there just vibing, just having a good time versus like, oh, I got to get my 4.5 eggs and 4 strips of bacon with toast, you know. Not a lot of that thinking that's going on from like a nutritional standpoint. In fact, the word nutrition, I think, is lost on most people at a mid-am, whereas, you know, a USAM, you've got all these like 17 to 19 year olds that are sitting there with their like, you know, nutritionist who's on staff, like, you know, watching every bite that goes into their mouth, all that sort of bullshit. So I would say that is something that immediately comes to mind.
We don't always talk about our golf games on Mudball Monday, but when we do, it's usually pretty realistic and a bit self-deprecating. I think this would certainly qualify as such.
Like an idiot, I found some time to practice before the mid-am. And you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't cram for the exam if you haven't been showing up to class the entire semester. You're not making an A. You're not making a B. You're not making a C. You can't do it. Just go in there and let it ride. I decided to practice. I'm doing fucking putting drills with a friend of mine who's on the Corn Ferry Tour in Charlotte 2 days before the mid-am. Like, I felt like anything inside 12 feet was good in the practice rounds. I mean, just dead center. And what do you know, like third hole of the tournament, I've got 5 feet for par, just total air ball. And literally since that putt, like that, it's been over. I mean, I can't hit the hole from 7 feet. So, you know, it's kind of a multiple choice question here. Like A is the arm lock claw. You know, I've been thinking about that. B is hypnosis. I've been thinking about hitting up our boy Michael Campbell and just like hypnotizing myself before every putt and seeing what happens. C is lefty. I've been thinking about going lefty, and D is all of the above. And you know, it's a hard split between B and D. I would say I might just go hypnosis, but I might just go ahead and do lefty arm lock claw with hypnosis to see if that gets me, you know, off the snide. But all that bullshit aside, I will say, like, this is the whole point of what I was talking about. Like, if I were putting the ball great right now, a month from now, I would probably be putting it worse than what I will be in current form, if that makes sense. Like, I think I can only go up from here. And so I'm beyond the point. I'm playing tomorrow, driving over to Dallas, playing Brook Hollow, which is pretty cool. Looking forward to that. And like, I'm not even going to sit here and worry about it, because it's like, if I go out there and start missing every 6 footer, like that, you know, that's the expectation, whatever, right? Like, that's what I'm probably going to do. And so it can kind of only get better than that. So what's there to be nervous about? You know, if you've been shanking the ball, you can only go up. As long as you don't hit that hosel, you can only do better. So that was a sesh right there. That was a thinking session. But yeah, the putter is clearly just so deeply infiltrated my dome. Lefty arm lock claw with hypnosis. That's where we're headed.
You all know that we love Thanksgiving at the Tie Podcast. So as has become tradition, we had to dedicate an entire episode to our favorite holiday.
Lots of
varietals. If we're talking changing up the oils, what are we doing here? We going peanut oil Chick-fil-A here on turkeys?
I was so pleased to hear what I heard. I had a conversation this morning with a guy I work with about this. And he was telling me he switched up the oils this year. And I said, you know, I was crossing my fingers under my desk. What are we getting into? Thank legume, God. He said
legume.
Peanut oil. So
hell yeah.
Just, I was really, really, and they just injected the shit out of it. I was like, why inject if you're going to fry? You're already there, you know? And he made a pretty good counter. He's like, you're already there. So I see both sides. I'm sure it was damn good, but, yeah, I've never tried the fried. It's never been done at our house and not sure if it's going to until I have one of my own. So I love a roast turkey. I love a smoked turkey. We do smoked and, you know, eight hours. Yeah. It just, I like it. I know there are people who don't.
This clip arguably or not arguably has nothing to do with Thanksgiving, but it did come from the episode. And I have to shout out my co-host, Mr. Walker Simus, because this was absolutely my favorite Mud Bowl Monday clip of the entire year.
And then the worst part of my game, dude, all right, I got to confess, the spin loft thing, I'm missing something. I flew through the first part of the puzzle and there's a fucking piece missing. I don't know where it is, but clearly Joe Mayo and I need to go and have a coffee because something's not working. So I've never been more lost. Ironically, I'm not sure where the bottom is. We continue to fall, but you know, the best part about the bottom of the barrel is that life is very cyclical, and in your deepest, darkest moments, it will come back around. So fortunately, we only have one direction to go, and that is up. And so once I figure out where my missing puzzle piece is in, we'll be back. So that's it.
I hope I don't get hit by Mossy Oak for copyright infringement here, but as you know, at the Tie Podcast, food is not a passion, it's an obsession. And even though this episode was dedicated to template holes, we had to get deep on the dip game, dip of choice, if you will.
You know, I two comments here. Like, I'm rolling on with the taco chat. Like, it has been the dish of the fall, the tacos. Just so many tacos going down. And I do not discriminate against a single taco varietal. I mean, I'll eat all of them. Pork tacos, beef tacos, fish tacos, chicken tacos, breakfast tacos, lunch tacos, dinner tacos, Tex-Mex tacos, Mexican tacos, like
dessert.
Give
tacos.
It all to me. Dessert tacos. But the one thing that doesn't belong on a taco, I think we're going to be on the same page here, but I'm curious to hear your reaction. Don't give me queso on a taco. Frankly, I think queso is egregiously overrated just in a general sense, but in particular, a taco does not need queso. Cheese is different than queso. I'm not talking about Spanish here. I'm talking about the English, you know, queso dish. That does not belong on a taco. Yay, nay.
Yeah, dude, queso is bullshit. And I'm here for all the haters. We were having this conversation the other day about milkshakes and how I've had a couple of milkshakes this year.
Fitch.
Well, they're super fitch. But in the wrong way. Like, there's got to be some xanthan gum situation or something terrible. And yeah, queso is the same way, where like sometimes I'll have queso. Not going to call out, you know, somebody on the shit list. Now, I don't want to give them any more publicity than they deserve. But yeah, I just, if I have queso, there's a line between, oh, dude, that I don't need much of that, but I want that. And I just don't want to touch that at all. I don't want to be anywhere near that. And I find that, you know, those who are trying to cut corners on the queso find themselves in the vast majority, which is, hey, man, I just don't really want that in my bowl, in my taco, on its own, with chips, whatever. I don't want that. So, yeah, I'm anti-queso. Now, you start getting an old queso fresco action, a little bit of really any kind of cheese I'm down for.
Yeah, but just can't be queso.
It just can't be queso.
You know what queso reminds me of? It's like a family of three, and you're a family with three kids, and like You know, the first one, complete stud, like quarterback at Harvard, shit like that. You know, second one comes up, a little bit different vibe. Like he's a swimmer, but, you know, gets a scholarship to Princeton, like to another stud. And then Queso comes along, the third one, and he's like, no, like I'm dropping out of high school. I'm not doing this. And likening this to dips, God, this is stupid. Like to me, you got hummus. That's your first kid. You got guac. That's number two. And then Queso's the third one, just the complete and utter black sheep of the family when it comes to dips. Like Queso is for little boys. If Queso is your dip of choice, if you're ranking Queso ahead of guacamole and hummus among many other dips that we could talk about, but those are some of my top few there. You're playing the game plain and simply wrong. Queso chat.
Let's set the tone. Let's continue this dip conversation into next week's Mudball Monday. We're going to be talking DOCs. Yeah, DOCs. That's what we're getting into. So keep you posted.
DOC is dips of choice for those dips that are on the same page here. Yeah.
Yes.
Although it's not necessarily one of our tenets at the Tide Podcast, you all know that on Mudball Monday, we do like to talk about our fitness and health routines, and something that both Walker and I got really into this year was both hot and cold therapy. That said, we talked a decent amount about sauna etiquette, what to do and what not to do, more importantly, in the sauna. Here's an example.
For the listeners of the Tie, like I'm putting out a statement, please don't be doing handstands and Wim Hof breathing. It's bullshit. Just be in there peacefully.
Yeah, the general rules are like, don't initiate conversation unless it's just you and one other person and it's very clear that it's a green light to do so. Do not Wim Hof it. As you said, Wim Hof is to be done in private. And then just don't curse in the sauna, you know, like don't play music too loud in your headphones.
Taking phone calls, all that sort of bullshit. There's way too much of it going on and it's tough.
Sacred
scene.
Okay. Space.
We can talk about it all day. We like the concept of routing versus ordering. There is a difference. Both are very important. So some chat about those. But some of the very, very best, I'm going to Augusta. That's my example because everybody knows it. And I think that the ordering of the holes there is absolutely stellar because you have your clear climax to me on the 16th tee. I think that's like one of the coolest holes out there. There's no hot take, especially. Well, like, and that's what makes the Masters so magical is like, not only is that kind of the climax of the round, 15, 16, but the Sunday hole location is the best one that makes that climax its very best. When you've got guys using that slope, I mean, think about like the 2019 Masters and 1986, Tiger in 05, like all of these different times, like that to me is the moment. But then you do have like the game is not over. There's a clear falling action and a resolution. 17, still an extremely legitimate golf hole. That's when you're starting to see, okay, like now we know what is going on. We know who is in this game, but there's still golf left to be played. And then your resolution, you got to play the 18th. Like 18 is one of, I mean, I think it oftentimes plays as like the hardest par four out there.
And 17 is interesting as well because like, 17 is more or less like just you got to hit two golf shots. And then on 18, you got to hit another two golf shots. 16, the same. I mean, it's just Augusta's mad, dude.
Well, and so like let's flip it all the other way. Like if the nines were reversed and you went out and you played the back nine as the front nine and then you finished on the front nine, there aren't a lot of bad holes out there. So I don't think that it would be some bad golf course. But in terms of the drama and what has made that such an amazing place for the best tournament in the world, so much of it has to do with the way that the course builds 1 to 18, not 10 to 9. And so that's what I mean by ordering is, you know, another example, TPC Sawgrass. So
another one of our favorites, our absolute favorite, the Cat. He made it back for the PNC this year. What a time. We had to dedicate an entire episode talking just about the Cat and the PNC Championship.
You know, let's get deep here. Let's get into our feelings. Like how does it make you feel these days to see Tiger get out there again? Because I don't know where he's at on the whole nine live sort of deal. I don't know if we're like, you know, bottom of the ninth or if we're like, you know, just getting into the top of the ninth and there's like an out or two, but like we are so far beyond the eighth life. It's ridiculous. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel more and more appreciative every time I see him out there. And I'm curious to see or to hear, you know, where you're at on that continuum.
You know when Mike Tyson retired in the ring after that fight, and he said something to the order of, I just don't really have it in my heart anymore. Like, I can still be in shape. I can still get in the gym and be able to stand in this ring and look like I belong here, but I don't have it in my heart anymore. And I forget who was talking to him. It was like years after it, but he said, I knew it was a couple of years before I even gave that speech that I knew that. I just kind of kept on getting away with it. I kept on being successful. And that's kind of where I feel like we're at with Kat. We're like, he's already realized it, but each time he shows back up, you know, he's able to prove to himself in shreds that he's still capable of winning, and he probably won't walk away from the game until those great shots go away. And I don't know when that'll be, but no, like a kid in a candy store. I mean, and everybody feels the same way getting to see him back on television. The joke that he played on JT, I think it was day two. They didn't announce JT off the first tee at all with anything other than his name. And then round two, he gets like every single accomplishment that he's ever had on the first tee, like Tiger did that one year when Phil called him off. That was awesome. And I think it's cool just watching him scrap around, because you know how disciplined the guy is. There's something about, you know, what Tiger's been through. And so when you see him fly it over an easy flag from 88 yards and be faced with this brutal up and down, and he still treats it with the same sincerity and, you know, the same process. And like, that's what I'm there to see, frankly. You know, we're not there to see him hoist trophies anymore. We're just there to see him like do his dance, kind of. And so that's what I love. That's kind of what I've been getting into.
Maybe the most hot button topic that came out late in this year, rollback. We're interested in rollback. We have been for a long time. There's a lot to consider. So here's a quick clip from our episode about rollback.
That course is 6,600 yards. Like, people are immediately thinking rollback means the ball's coming back 20%. It's coming back 5%. And what I think is more important to understand, the term halting, I think that's all we're doing. Because if you think about all of the other things that have contributed to the ball going further, fitness regimen, people understanding the golf swing better, ground conditions, there's so many things that go into the distance that the ball travels these days. The ball is absolutely a big piece of it, but it is by no means the only measure that has been taken to get the ball to go as far as it has. And so all I think that we're doing here realistically is saying, okay, in 2028, we're going to be about in the same spot as we are today, because all of those other things are going to persist. It's just that if we slow down the rate at which the golf ball is going further, then, you know, maybe that's one variable that we're going to control here. And it's the one that makes the most sense. Right. So I think that's an interesting way to kind of think through this. And another spot that my mind goes there is like, you know, when I was talking to someone the other day about like, what are the good and bad outcomes of this? Something that I think has been a really negative outcome of the ball going further and us deciding to not roll it back is that all of a sudden, like, some of the advancements that we've made from an agronomic standpoint that in my mind have been extremely positive from a standpoint of aesthetics and playing conditions and something that everyone enjoys, the way that we've made golf courses firmer, some of these new strands of grass that are being implemented at a lot of new golf courses, sandier conditions, the way that we've sought out sandy golf. That's a big piece of architecture here that no one seems to talk about. Like, the ball goes further on sand, and that's become the model of where people want to build golf courses. But all of a sudden, if the ball keeps going further, we kind of muddle the, oh, well, the golf ball is going further, and so maybe we shouldn't be having these firm playing conditions. It's like, no, we want really nice, high quality, firm playing conditions. And so don't let the golf ball get in the way of other things that are making the game better. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've thought about, is like, not just the golf ball going from one point to another further, but what are all of the other things that get kind of lost in translation there that maybe have been to the detriment of the game overall?
Potentially the most important part of Mudball Monday, just the outtakes and banter. So a nice little compilation of some of my favorite outtakes of the year.
You know, I'm not sure if you've ever done hibachi after a round of golf, but
I sure haven't. No.
God, recipe.
Are you like a solo hibachi guy? Like, is that what you're doing on Friday nights?
Absolutely not. But,
I think we know what you're up to on the weekends now. Yeah, like some 13-year-old birthday parties, and Simus is over there, like sunglasses on, sipping an Asahi, doing hibachi,
just like hanging out. Yeah. No, I feel like that's probably a top 10 serial killer move, is going to a hibachi restaurant by yourself.
I would say top one.
Yeah. That's a tough scene. If you ever catch me, if any of you ever catch me at a hibachi bar alone, you have full rights to pull me aside in the parking lot and say, "Hey man,
Mudball Monday.
We're doing a little checkup on you. You doing all right?" Give me an update on how your view on culture, competition, and architecture has kind of evolved over the last year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to sidestep you there, actually. You're talking about a Cuban sandwich. You just got me thinking about pork. I'm going to go a different direction. Okay, pork chops, right? Like, I think the pork chop, it's such an overlooked piece of meat, because I've had two pork chops this month that were so good.
And being a hot coffee guy also, recently, I've had a couple of those mornings, or honestly, more often than not, where you sip your coffee and just go, "God, I'm so happy to be alive right now." It's a good moment.
When you say hot coffee guy, do you mean you like your coffee hot, or you're a coffee guy who you consider to be hot?
Both. But
okay. Good answer.
I'd say that I think of the former first, but
okay.
You know, gotta have that self love and that coffee love. They go hand in hand. Two free ads today on the reading/listening category.
Ripping the free ads.
Ripping free ads. Bless. Hey, but sometimes you just got to give the love. Give the love and it all comes back to you.
Live off love. What is money? God. No more. We're moving on from the fast shitting dog. If we have anybody left, we'll keep them here for the Ron Weasley Award.
Ron Weasley.
That's not where I was thinking exactly, but yeah, that too. But so Ron Weasley, I mean, one of my favorite characters in any movie ever. Of course, it's a Thai podcast episode, and so we have to get a Harry Potter reference in here.
Second thing is, I gotta know, sweet potato casserole, do y'all leave any texture in there, or is it just kind of like one homogenous mash?
Well, I couldn't tell.
I guess
because I took a stand.
Good man. That kind of occupied a little bit of my thinking space. And then, my goodness, TGL, I feel like I have to say it. The dome has collapsed. My dome has collapsed. I am not sure how in the next 53 days. Regardless of no rent payment and the tidy strings that Tiger and Rory seem to have in that area, I still don't know how we're going to get it done. But I have a feeling that they're going to make a push at it. So I'm just fascinated to see what takes place in the next 50 days. And we will see. So I'll toss it back to you. What's your dirt, Henry Schimpf?
We chose, we're off the highway. Okay. We finally chose an exit, and God damn it. What's the only restaurant on that exit? It's a fucking Chipotle. Like, we made a statement about the direction that we're going, but it's like 55 miles off the highway. Like, it's a long time before we have to actually announce ourselves as supporters of Chipotle, but like, it's the only restaurant there. And at the next exit, there was a Chick-fil-A. There was a Mickey D's. There were a lot of options. And so we've announced the direction in which we're heading, but ultimately it's going to take some time to get there. And once we do, it's not going to be a very big deal at all.
What a world we live in.
What I think is a bigger deal. Last thing that we're going to touch on here today. Anything else? Or should we leave him with Mudball Monday?
I've got one quick thought. I think that Envy Apples are the Augusta National of Apple for idols. And for the reason for that is, when Augusta's really good, it's really fucking good. And when Augusta's not that good, kind of on a you know, sour December day. You get a bunch of mud balls. You know, it's just mud not ball. That good.
And finally, last thing I'll leave you with before we get into a full gamut of Mudball Mondays for the rest of the year, some chat about our friends at Good Walk Coffee. If you can't pick it up out of these already, use code THETIE, THETIE, at goodwalkcoffee.com. Cheers, everybody.
You know, as I mentioned many, many weeks ago, I'm just still on South American Dark and Mudball Half Calf.
Dude, it's so good. South American Dark. Just
I'm
slaps.
So dialed.
Let me briefly sip on my Mudball Half Calf before we get started.
Hold my half calf and watch this.
God, that is so good.
Of course, drinking the Thai Mudball Half Calf.
Now, I still ride hard for the Mudball Half Calf, and I do have some on hand, but I have transitioned to full calf, maybe for a few weeks or so. But I've got the Colombian medium roast, the 5-pound staff bag on hand, so I have enough beans to get me and a small Cuban family through at least the next few weeks.
The Mudball Half Calf, that is, use code THETIE at goodwalkcoffee.com, poor favor, is absolutely flowing between the hours of 5:30 and 6:30.
Again, quite early in the week, but just absolutely ripping Good Walk Coffee.
Just a big coffee weekend, of course. So I was brewing up just like a large pot of Mudball Half Calf every day.
My Good Walk, I've been kind of still mixing it up. South American Dark Roast, Mudball Half Calf, cinnamon, a little bit of maple syrup from time to time, a little bit of buch, a little bit of butter. Buch.
You know, I've got the Mudball Half Calf, of course. I've got the Clubhouse South American Dark Roast, of course. Both of those coming from our friends at Good Walk Coffee. GoodWalkCoffee.com. Use code THETIE, THETIE, for 20% off anything on the site.